The following is a lecture given by His Holiness Jayabhataka Swami on October 1st, 1985 at New Talavan Farm in Cario, Mississippi. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th Canto, Chapter 1, Text 3.
O greatly fortunate and learned Brahmana, whether Narayana is partial or impartial, has become a subject of great doubt. Kindly dispel my doubt with positive evidence that Narayana is always neutral and equal to everyone. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Since Lord Narayana is absolute, His transcendental qualities are described as one. Thus His punishments and His offerings of favor are both of the same value. Essentially, His inimical actions are not displays of enmity towards His so-called enemies, but in the material field one thinks that Krishna is favorable to devotees and unfavorable to non-devotees. When Krishna finally instructs in Bhagavad Gita, sarva-dharman parityaja mamekam saranam braja, this is meant not only for Arjuna but for every living entity within this universe. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport to the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 1, Text 3, in the chapter entitled The Supreme Lord is Equal to Everyone. So as is customary with many of the chapters of the Srimad Bhagavatam, they begin with various questions which are addressed. In this sense, Parikshit Maharaj is addressing his questions to Sukadev Goswami. Since the Lord in previous incarnations has apparently helped Lord Indra and defeated the asuras, and that it naturally a doubt could come up that whether the Lord is impartial. It seems that He takes the part of His the side of His devotee and works against His the asuras or the non-devotees. So then, is God really impartial? Is He neutral? Or is it actually that He's taking sides? So, for this could be answered from various angles. Of course, commonly we know that actually Krishna is neutral, but He reciprocates according to how different persons approach Him. For instance, in Bhagavad Gita, He described Jayajita Mang Prapadyang Tetang Stataiva Vajamyaham. According to how people worship Him, similarly He reciprocates with them and worships them. So those who worship Him with hate, enmity, such as some of the asuras who want to kill Him, then He reciprocates with them and kills them. And those devotees who worship Him with devotion and with faith, He reciprocates and He protects them and He gives them His love, since those devotees are giving their love to Him. And some would say, well, although He's answering the prayers of the respective people accordingly, but one person's getting slain by the Lord and the other person's getting embraced, but then, in one sense, is this still equal? And this has been answered today by Srila Prabhupada in the purport, that because the Lord is absolute, even if He kills someone, they achieve liberation. So no matter what benediction he gives to someone, even if it appears materially to be harsh, ultimately everything he does is all good, and thus no one is the loser. In fact, anything to do with Krishna, you come out ahead. Just like there are some people that anything you do with them, everything comes out to be according to the astrological science. There are some people called Makundas. And anything you do with those people comes out to be a total wipeout. In fact, if you see them, the first thing you get up in the morning, then the rest of the day is supposed to be a total bummer, or a total kind of a horrible thing. And there's a story about, you know, just, it's kind of a little off the topic, but it's kind of interesting. It's a kind of a Gopal Bhar story that touches on this, that one time the king, he woke up, looked out of his room, and just beneath his palace there was the house of Gopal, his courtier. He looked to him, and the very first person he saw that morning, got up, kind of rubbed his eyes, opened his eyes, there was Gopal on his veranda. And he said, you know, "Hello Gopal, how are you?" So then Gopal said, "Maharaj, please accept my namaskar, my obeisances to you." So then, that day the king was being shaved, and for the first time, his barber cut him. 17 years the barber had been shaving him, and that day he got cut. 17 years had never been cut. So then the king decided that the very first person I saw today was Gopal. Actually, he must be one of these Makundas. And having him in my kingdom is causing so many people misfortune. They're waking up and seeing him and their whole days are being ruined. So I should save all the people from suffering and have him beheaded. So he called Gopal and told him that you're going to be beheaded. Gopal said, "What? Now, Lord, of course, you're the king, whatever you want to do, I mean, no one can argue, but could you kindly tell me why?" And then the king said, explained that. Then the barber said, "For I've never cut anyone, ever the king, 17 years, this today I cut, this is an amazing thing." So the king explained that this is a thing has happened, so I've come to the conclusion that you must be a Makunda. So therefore you have to, it's not Mukunda, it's Makunda. So different. So, therefore, I'm going to have you beheaded and save my kingdom from having to have your inauspicious presence. So then Gopal said, "Well then, there's someone else who should also get the same fate. I shouldn't be the only one. There's someone who's a greater Makunda than me." "And who is that?" "So, well, my lord, the very first person that I saw today when I woke up was you." "And I'm about to be beheaded." And the king thought for a minute and said, "All right, this is the castle." So, of course, there may be people who create bad influences, but the Lord, He's just the opposite. Everything that happens with Krishna is all good. Even Putana, the witch, she came to kill Krishna by giving poison on her breast. Because Krishna sucked her breast like a mother, although he sucked her life, he promoted her to the spiritual realm to be his own mother in the spiritual world. And like this, Krishna is so kind that even if a demon offers some light, slight service, that he reciprocates and gives them sarupya or salokya or some appropriate liberation. So actually the Lord is impartial, but some people are approaching him in a particular mood, and that's also one of his rasas. One of the seven temporary rasas is chivalry. So chivalry is manifested when you're fighting with someone, and hardly can he fight with his devotees very often. You see. So in the material world, sometimes he comes and he fights with the demons, and this way he gets to relate on that chivalrous temporary rasa and satisfy that particular desire. Those demons are actually liberated for being a sparring partner with the Lord. So they're actually the benefactor of the Lord's mercy. In fact, in some cases, those demons get liberated while Indra, all he gets is back to the heavenly planets. After he dies, he may not get liberation. His extension as a trustee of the prison house in a very exalted position has just been extended with privileges. But still, he's not been granted a reprieve. It's just instead of having to be behind the bars in the lower planets, he's able to roam around a little freely in the upper offices of the prison house. So actually, we see that in the case of Chitra Ketu, when he took rebirth as an asura, according to the curse of Mother Parvati, that time he took birth as, Vritrasura. At that time, actually, he was still Krishna conscious, even though he took appearance as a demon. So, actually, he was able to achieve pure Krishna consciousness, while Indra was only able to achieve a little bit of security in his kingdom. So actually, Vishnu said that, admitted that it was Vritrasura who was more blessed, more, he got the bigger benediction than Indra. So this happened because the demigods are devotees, but they're devotees with material desire. Those who have material desire, then Krishna reciprocates and gives them a comfortable situation. That's why it's dangerous sometimes that a devotee in the Krishna conscious movement, if they become, due to some association with fruitive workers, if they become attached to the idea of having a very comfortable situation, and if that becomes the predominating desire in their lives, then as a result, when they leave their body, if that hasn't been thoroughly transformed into pure devotion, then they may get a very comfortable situation as a devotee in the heavenly planets. And in fact, apparently Srila Prabhupada said that there are many of his disciples who will take birth in heavenly planets. So this is something we have to guard against. Is to accept whatever Krishna gives, not that we artificially take on unnecessary austerity, but to accept what comes easily and not become over preoccupied with simply having a very comfortable situation, lest we think that that is the goal of life rather than actually developing our pure love for Krishna. You see, it's hard to find the middle. You find some people are very unnecessarily engaged in dry austerities, and you find other devotees are seem to be preoccupied with having a very comfortable situation to the extent that it becomes the predominating trait more than the desire to expand the Krishna conscious movement or to engage in pure devotional service. So these things have to be equalized, and person learns to take basically what comes along naturally without an over-endeavor, and very carefully focusing the consciousness in Krishna's service. So, Krishna is actually the supreme neutral and equal, but we can take advantage of his equality by approaching him in a mood of surrender. Unfortunately, that sometimes our mood of surrender may not be so perfect. Therefore, we may not actually be qualified to get that full type of reciprocation from Krishna. Therefore, some of the great devotees, they had hoped or wished that Krishna wouldn't be so equal, that he would be a little more merciful, and out of his own initiative would actually give that mercy. But Krishna, in his form as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is obliged to be impartial. But in his form as devotee, when he appeared as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, taking on the color and the mood of Radharani, then since the devotee is actually always glorifying Krishna and always telling the fallen souls, worship Krishna, surrender to Krishna, so as devotee, the Lord had manifested that quality of actually trying to deliver all the fallen souls. So therefore, the devotees glorify Lord Chaitanya that he's even more merciful than Krishna. Although he is Krishna, but he is Krishna in a more merciful form. Namo Mahavadanaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaura Tushe Namo Nama. So, although Krishna offered everyone sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam saranam vraja, it wasn't only meant for Arjuna, as Prabhupada mentioned here, it's for every living entity within this universe. But there are so many living entities who didn't surrender to Krishna. Apart from Sisupal, Jarasandha and others who were fortunate enough to die in the presence of the Lord. But there are so many other souls, other demons or other persons who didn't surrender to Krishna, although he was present. So, that's their misfortune because they had the opportunity. Just like if the governor, one time, there was, you know how devotees are sometimes kind of just being trained as brahmanas or something. In the ancient tradition, that brahmanas are never to be regulated by the kings. Sometimes the devotees think that they're not in the 20th century, but they're brahmanas living in the Dwarpa Yuga or something, and they tend to neglect certain legalities or laws of the land and so on and so forth, which appear to them to be rather trivial or materialistic. Like in India this happened where the devotees neglected to one particular devotee, and well, many devotees would just kind of overstay their visas. They wouldn't bother to go in time. It kind of took the people for granted. So there was a new officer and he decided that he was going to make a devotee an example. So the next was actually Gopal Swami. He went down to the, about 2 weeks late after his visa had expired, he went down to the office and the person became so impatient with him that he decided to make an example out of him and had him arrested for not having applied for a visa extension within the appropriate time. So this was pretty shocking because no one had ever been arrested before, especially just for being overextended on a visa. But they are very vocative that it was simply as an example. They didn't want the devotees or anyone to just take these things lightly. They had to follow the letter of the law. So then I was present at the courtroom, and that was a lady judge, and she was, for some reason, very heavy. And she also just got into the whole mood and said, you know, well, we're just going to take this as a, example or something like that. Everyone has to follow the law. Just, she followed the prosecutor's arguments. They don't have juries there. Anyway, she gave the verdict. 7 days of rigorous imprisonment, breaking the rocks, you know, something like that. So, she had rigorous imprisonment, which meant, you know, the worst standard of imprisonment they got. Sometimes you can get kind of A-class imprisonment where they give you a nice private room and everything. In spite of being given rigorous imprisonment, in the prison house, the people were very nice. They gave them an A-class room anyway. And we got permission to bring him prasad every day. At least they gave that permission. But it turned out that 2 days after he was in the prison, it turned out to be Aurobindo's birthday. Aurobindo, apart from being a famous yogi, he was a freedom fighter. And he was a journalist and a lawyer and so on. So he got arrested by the British. And when he was in prison, that's when he became a yogi. This is how Haridas Thakur told the prisoners, it's a good place to practice devotional service because there's not so many distractions. Well, actually, Aurobindo's spiritual life began in the prison. So he was in prison for quite a bit of time. And so because he was considered like kind of a martyr or great freedom fighter and so on, for India's independence on his 100th anniversary of his birth, the governor went to all to prison, and he anyone who wanted that he could be, you know, I mean, apart from like serious like murders and just the normal like people that are in some misdemeanors, they all got pardoned as a kind of like the benediction of Aurobindo, you know, they handed down through the parampara. So the governor came there, and naturally Gopal Swami took advantage, and he got freed after 2 days. And so many other hundreds of people got freed. So there Krishna came on this planet, and anyone who took surrender to him on that occasion, they could get freed. So the governor came to the prison house, anyone wanted to, they could get freed. I mean, if they were stupid enough to want to stay there, well, it's another thing. But generally speaking, everyone, even if you didn't want, actually, even they didn't ask, some people say, well, all right, they can go. There's not major criminals or anything. So in this way, so many people were relieved. So some people who died in Krishna's presence, they got liberation. Those who surrendered, they could get his eternal association, or some even achieve pure love. They were able to get Krishna. But there are so many who didn't take advantage of that. There are so many hardened criminals who are too hard to take advantage of that visit of the Lord. They were too demoniac, and their hearts weren't melted. So when Lord Chaitanya came, when Krishna came in his form as Chaitanya, then all of these hardened criminals, instead of just killing them, he would melt their hearts, he would make them devotees, and give them Krishna prema. So in this way, he'd kill their demonic nature, and he would give them the perfection of life. So therefore, namo mahabhadanaya, there's no greater charitable person more than Lord Chaitanya. He's giving the greatest gift so freely. So actually, Lord Chaitanya's movement is still present on this planet, been handed down to the disciplic succession. And by chanting the holy name, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasati Gaur Bhaktivinoda, by worshipping Sri Sri Gaur Nitai, we can get their mercy. This has been brought in all over the West by Srila Prabhupada's mercy. Therefore, we have this opportunity of getting Lord Chaitanya's mercy. Even though we may be criminals, in the karmic sense, we may have had so many demoniac natures before being a devotee, you see, or even things which are not fully purified yet after having initially surrendered. But by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, all these can be purified, and we can actually achieve pure devotional service. So this is the very special mercy of Lord Chaitanya. We should understand that Krishna has offered this opportunity to everyone. Even today we can surrender to him. That is a shortcut. And if for any reason we are finding that our surrender is not at the par, not at the proper level, but we should just take more and more shelter of Lord Chaitanya, because by his mercy, we can actually be naturally made into a surrendered soul to Krishna, into a Krishna premi, or someone who has love for Krishna. This is Lord Chaitanya's, Lord Nityananda's special mercy. It's by the mercy of Nitai Gaur, that we can get the mercy and the pure devotion for Radha Radha Kanta. It's actually devotees of Radha Krishna are there in Vrindavan. You see, the devotees of Lord Chaitanya are simultaneously both devotees of Radha Krishna and Lord Chaitanya. And they simultaneously participate in both the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya in Svetadvipa, in Navadvipa in the spiritual world, and the pastimes of Radha Govinda, Radha Radha Kanta in Golok Vrindavana. So this is a special benediction of being a devotee of Lord Chaitanya. It's become very easy to get the mercy of Lord Krishna when we approach through Lord Chaitanya and his devotees. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adoita Gadadharo Sivasari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram 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 Hare Hare. So, thank you very much for allowing me to visit you here in Nutalavon, special pilgrimage place where Srila Prabhupada has performed his pastimes. So all the devotees here are all auspicious. So by seeing their bright faces, today my day will be all auspicious. More than my day. Of course, according to Vedic tradition, there was a reception, and although it's not required or in any way, actually the spiritual master is a spiritual master for Prabhupada's grandchildren, not for the god brothers or god sisters. In fact, god brother or god sisters themselves may at any time with Prabhupada's mercy take on responsibilities in the future for carrying on the disciplic succession. But sometimes a god brother or god sister, either out of respect as a representative of the parampara or as a Vaishnava or just to show example to the other devotees, sometimes they participate in those ceremonies, although it's not at all compulsory. So it's always a bit embarrassing for a peer, for a god brother. Although, in Prabhupada's presence, there were senior god-brothers or there were senior god-sisters. There was always that mood, which I'm sure should continue even in the grand disciples of Prabhupada, where one should take advantage of any experience that an older god-brother or god-sister has in how to render devotional service better. But that, of course, is on a god-brother, god-sister reciprocation. In any case, I'm deeply moved by the unity and the family spirit here in the Nutalavon project, and I hope that the family keeps on growing more and more so that more people can take shelter. We've seen that, for instance, in some of our bigger projects around the world, like in New Vrindavan, they've been able to create a spiritual community which in itself has performed and is performing a great preaching. So this is also our objective. Prabhupada wanted us to have a spiritual community. And I know that when Prabhupada was in India, at that time Balavanta Prabhu had written to him about that he had just procured some farms. And Prabhupada wrote that at that time he wanted to have a kind of a very dynamic example of a Varnashram system, of a devotional system and that New Taliban could be developed in that way to be to house, I think he said, 10 or 20,000 devotees. In India, anyway, we had 600 acres. He said you can easily have 20,000 devotees. To this day, we haven't figured out exactly how. But Prabhupada had the vision, so here there's 1,600. So then, according to that, acres, or maybe they don't have a equal growing season, but maybe 25 to 50,000 people could be envisioned here. We'll lose this rural aspect, I guess. In any case, there is a big scope for giving shelter to so many devotees. That was Prabhupada's vision. And I was always, I had a personal realization once in seeing Prabhupada do different projects, that it wasn't that every project was exactly the same, but that Prabhupada had different strategies for different projects. Like in Mayapur, he always said, I want here a spiritual city. And then a little known project, I mean, it's a little known for people around the world, but nonetheless it was a project that Prabhupada visited once or twice, and that was Haridaspur. There, Prabhupada said, this is a very nice village. Here the people are devoted. Haridas Thakur was here. So he said, build a temple and you make this an example, a prototype of an existing village that becomes Krishna conscious. Like moving into, like just the opposite of what they did in Rajneeshpuram. They moved in and kicked out all the old people. They didn't make them, you know, followers as such. In fact, it just came, as we just drove in here, it came on the radio that they just burned all their Bibles and that he's declared that he's not a Bhagawan. He's just an ordinary man, and that he just come to help people out, and he's not a religion. And he said the IRS is already very interested in that pronouncement. He may have to pay tax on his 90 Rolls Royces or something. I don't know what that has to do, but in any case, Prabhupada, he had a different vision. In Haridaspur, vision was to, all right, you come here, you set up this you develop this temple, it's an ancient shrine, and you make a perfect, ideal village from an existing village. In Mayapur, there was nothing there. I mean, there is, the land we have is barren, I mean, not barren, but it's an empty land, and used just for agriculture, and he wanted a city built there. He wants a city to be built there. So one place he wanted to build a city, another place he wanted to transform a village into a Krishna conscious one. Then like in another place, in Hyderabad farm, there his vision was, here we will make our own villages. There's a barren land, there was no one on it. He said, we'll build the villages, we'll bring the people in on our terms, and we'll give them what will be there in this village. They'll each have a house, they'll do their own truck gardening, and the produce they'll give to the deities, and in return there'll be some areas which will be farmed by a core of devotees who are, say, dedicated, or who are like the central under the central administration. They'll grow the grains with the big machines and everything that are not labor intensive but more machine intensive, and then they give the vegetables which are labor intensive, and they'll get then they get the grains, or they get the prasadam, depending on how, you know, he didn't give all the details, but like that he had some idea about building up villages in a different way, a kind of a reciprocal bartering system almost, or reciprocation of different people doing different things. And I'm sure that, of course, these are just two or three examples that I've experienced, and I know that other devotees, they must surely have been able to add other examples that how different projects in different places Prabhupada had a different vision. It would be very interesting here in New Taliban to discuss on this topic, that what was Prabhupada's vision here Not that we have to be a stereotype and just copy other people's programs, but that try to understand what was Prabhupada's idea for this type of project. It may be the same as another project, not that we have to, you know, just for the sake of being different, you know, have to be different, but it may be the same, may not be. That's neither here nor there. What I mean is to actually understand what is the way that we can serve Prabhupada here, what was his desire, or where he's given a general scope, then to, according to this time, place, and circumstance, to develop things in that way. Of course, I know this is what has been going on already, so I'm just saying that this is definitely a very auspicious way of doing things. And I'm agreeing with that, the program of developing the project like that. So the result of that, of course, if we do things which are pleasing to Prabhupada, which are pleasing to the previous spiritual masters in the disciplic succession, then naturally things start to develop in a very favorable way. The more that we satisfy the previous acharyas, the more that Krishna's mercy and empowerment comes down. Just look at Abhimanyu. Abhimanyu was a 16-year-old child from one point of view. He was hardly of age to fight with such stalwart warriors like grandfather Bhishma, Duryodhana, and Dronacharya and others. But because he was empowered by various blessings of great devotees and brahmanas, and because he had already studied under a great teacher, although he wasn't fully complete, he was nonetheless able to do something which no one else could do, that was to break the mighty phalanx of the Kurus. So, although a person may be, in some aspects, may not be on the same, fully developed in terms of you know, being a completely God-realized soul or something, but just by carrying out very correctly what is the desire of the previous acharyas, the same power is handed down and miracles can be achieved in expanding Krishna consciousness. You see, of course, we shouldn't make the mistake Abhimanyu made where he didn't finish his lesson. That time, I think he was in the womb of the mother and his mother fell asleep or something and he couldn't hear the last thing, which was how to get out of the phallus. So he got in, but he couldn't get out. That's another point. We should be very clear about what Prabhupada wants, what the previous acharyas want. When we are clear, when we are sure, then we should go ahead without any doubt. We should go ahead with full enthusiasm, knowing that their mercy is there behind us. So, I think already we can see that Krishna's mercy is coming down. The evidence is there to that effect, and that things are starting to gradually expand. Nice devotees are coming and the community is blossoming. So we should just be very careful to keep all relationships on a very Vaishnava, Krishna conscious level. Avoid the thing that happens when there are big communities that sometimes grows into a loss of that kind of a family spirit. If we can keep us unified, just like Krishna had a family with millions of people and they were all one big family. So similarly, we can remain one family even if our numbers grow, if we keep that Krishna conscious spirit and if we avoid you know, any kind of material consciousness that comes up to interfere with that natural Krishna conscious flow and appreciation of the good qualities of others, and avoiding just seeing bad qualities. There will always be some bad qualities. No one is 100% perfect. Even those who are perfect, if you look hard enough, you can find something bad. Sisupal found things to complain about in Krishna, although there was nothing wrong with Krishna, but Sisupal was looking hard enough that he thought that he saw something wrong. So there are, certainly Krishna is absolute and pure, the conditioned soul or even a devotee who's practicing, they naturally could have so many things that one could point out. But if we actually see how a person is dedicated, how they're serving, how they're engaged in preaching or their activities, if we rather look towards the good qualities, which is recommended, then naturally we start seeing we're in a very fortunate situation to be in a society, in a community, with so many wonderful devotees who have got so many wonderful qualities. All right, there may still be a few qualities we don't want to talk about. But there are so many qualities that we can talk about and we enjoy talking about, and those are the qualities we should focus on. And the other things, Prabhupada said, they will disappear, they are superficial. Any residual material quality that may be there in a devotee will gradually be burnt away by the process of Krishna consciousness. So rather we like to focus on all the good qualities we see in various devotees. Just like a parent, in their children, they like to see the good qualities. They're looking, will my child become a devotee? Is my child a devotee? So naturally, when they see those qualities, they feel very happy. Naturally, children will be children in other moments. But those moments of showing some special quality, those are high points, points of pride or hope in a parent that maybe this child will be a real putra or putri and be able to deliver the parents, if not more. So, in this way, we should also be very proud when we see different devotees rendering their nice devotional service. And that should be a source of inspiration for us. In this way, as we learn to appreciate each other's better qualities, then naturally our community becomes closer and closer, and all the devotees start to learn to reciprocate with each other on a much higher, more Krishna conscious level. And that actually encourages one to develop more of these good qualities, and naturally, due to neglect, any kind of bad qualities that are still there, they start to disappear more and more. So I'm very thankful to be here in your presence. Hare Krishna. Hare. Any questions? Yes?
I was wondering, is this the correct understanding that we would, if we follow the process, the Sri Prabhupada worked out, chanting our 16 rounds, following the 12 regular principles, and staying in association with devotees, that when our time comes to leave our body, that even if we didn't purify everything, like, for instance, the material desires you were mentioning, that he would take us back anyway?
Well, the Prabhupada said that if a person follows the process of Krishna consciousness, they won't have to take birth again in the material world. Now, how free we are from things like offenses may dictate how high we go up in the spiritual world. Whether we get a place in Vaikuntha, whether we get a place in the Lord Vrindavan, how high we're able to go.
Or, I mean, if a person, I had one person approach me in India. He was a real strange character. He said, I've been chanting 32 or 20 or 16 rounds for 26 years. But I never gave up eating fish. Neutral position that we're discussing today, he reciprocates with a person so perfectly that if someone were to do something like that because of their offenses to chanting while chanting the holy name, that they don't actually make advancement towards pure love for Krishna. They're getting some benefit from chanting, but at the same time their material desires aren't going due to being absorbed in sense gratification like that. So I advised him that you should chant the names of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and by his mercy you may be able to overcome this desire of eating fish. And sure enough, after chanting Lord Chaitanya's names for some period of time, he got some spiritual intelligence and he could stop eating fish. Even though for 26 years he was on this weird practice where he, although chanting, he never tried to avoid breaking that regular principle. So if a person, is determined, all right, I'm going to chant my 16 rounds and I'm going to follow the four principles, but if they take something in an attitude that I'm determined not to give up my material attachments, then that's an anachronism. From our side, it should be not just externals, but it should be internally that we're trying to follow the process. We're trying from our part to give up our attachments. If we have the proper attitude, we're trying to give up our attachments, we're trying to avoid, even if we are not fully successful. Prabhupada said that that Krishna is so merciful, Lord Chaitanya is so merciful, even though we may not, at the point of death, have been 100% successful, we can still get delivered. In fact, I don't know how long I should go on. I was in Montreal and Prabhupada was giving a lecture. That time we had a Vyasa San for him. It was very high. It was like when we would stand up, we would just be facing Prabhupada eye to eye. Or he would still be even a little higher than that. It was a very high Vyasa San and they had to kind of crawl up like the steps going up it. It was more like a kind of a culprit. Do you call it culprit or something? Pulpit. So he would be up there, but he had a seat there, and he would even take prasad there. On a feast, they'd bring him a big plate of prasadam, and we'd all be sitting down, he'd take prasad from there. And sometimes he'd give prasad out from there. So one day he was giving his lecture from up there, naturally. And on this point, he was just preaching very hard. We have to be 100% Krishna conscious. We have to try. We have to be 100% Krishna conscious. We have to try for that. We have to become. If we are 100% Krishna conscious, then we can get pure love for Krishna. Then our life will be completely successful. Just hammering this point. And the devotees, thinking 100%, their heads gradually started hanging down and they became very thoughtful. The 100% was like such an objective that it never seemed that it's ever possible even, to get real close to 100%. But Prabhupada was very emphatic on this point. The devotees were very thoughtful at that time. Then Prabhupada, he ended the class and there was just a heavy silence. There were no questions. Just ended the class and said, become 100% Krishna conscious. And there was just like a deathly, you saw a silence so thick you could swim through it. And then Prabhupada was just sitting there on that raised Vyasasana and said, and even if you're 90% Krishna conscious, Krishna is so kind that you still may be delivered. Then he started to get down. And he was about halfway down, just as he was getting off the Vyasasana. He turned to the devotees, said, even 90% you can be delivered. He started walking off. Then he turned and his charter fell off. I remember it was like such a dramatic. It's almost like, you know, what you see in those movies, Julius Caesar, just like it's just chugger, just flew like that, you know. So even 70%. They took his chugger and threw it over his shoulder and raised his head and walked out. Srila Prabhupada ki! But the purport is try for 100%.